And joining us right now on the line is the lovely, the talented, the incredible Judy Collins. We've had her on the show before, but we have her back again. How can you not? Sweet Judy Blue Eyes is with us. The only thing I regret is that no one sent me your book. So I don't have your book, no.
And, Give me your address and I'll send you my book. Are you kidding?
Oh, we'll do that at the end because I want to add something to the interview about that.
Good.
But anyway, I do have in my hands, and ladies and gentlemen, take a look on radio here. My hands look my hands and myself look perfect on the radio. I have in my hands the Judy Collins Live in Ireland DVD and the Judy Collins Live in Ireland CD as well. And they are fantastic. Now, that was from a PBS special, right?
Yes. It was started to be shown on the pledge drives of PBS in Boston and all over the country in March this year. We taped it. We recorded it. We filmed it in Ireland last year, almost a year ago, on the 29th of September of 2013. We were at the Dromoulin Castle in County Clare of Ireland, and it was just spectacular. And, you know, we had some guests. You'll see it's a beautiful castle. There's a picture of the cover
yeah,
and
gorgeous.
Me. Yeah. Isn't it gorgeous? And
yes.
Then we have some personal talk on the interviews and so on that show you where the castle is and tell you about my Irish background. And then we sing lots of songs in this gorgeous setting. And I had Mary Black on the show with me. We did a duet. She's such a wonderful Irish singer. And Ari Hest, who's just great, who's actually joining me in Boston at the Wilbur for two shows on Sunday.
Really?
Sunday, the, the, what is today, the 18, 19, 20, 21st. And so we had a great time, and I think people enjoy it. They're showing it on PBS again this month in their pledge drive, so it was very exciting to do that.
I imagine it would be, and I was watching this thing, and I loved it.
Oh, good.
Well, when you hear things like Chelsea Morning, I've heard you do that millions of times and still love it. But to hear things like Cats in the Cradle was kind of interesting for me.
Good.
Yeah, I like that.
Good. He was such a great fellow, great friend of mine, Harry.
Harry was a friend of mine as well. And he just spent all his time and energy on trying to solve world hunger.
World hunger was
It was amazing.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah. I remember being on stage with him in Milwaukee. His little son was holding on to his leg while he was doing his concert. His son had these big curly blonde locks.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing time. What a great talent, and what a shame that he's not with us.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So you have it's funny because it says in your bio how old you are, and
or how young I am.
Exactly. Well, exactly, and that's really my point. You are young. You're quite young for someone who's had all these hits and stuff. But you started when you were 13 years old.
Yes, I did. I played professionally, I should say, with an orchestra, playing a Mozart piano concerto with an orchestra in Denver. And that brings me to the story of my conductor and my teacher, Antonia Brico. I talk about her in my book, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, and I speak about her often because she was so important. But 40 years ago, a movie I made about her came out. And again, it's going to be on PBS this year in the fourth quarter, which I guess we're almost in now. So I think they'll have it probably in the Pledge Drive series in November, or possibly they'll bounce it to February. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's the story of her life, Antonia Brico. She was the first major conductor of major symphonies in the world. And she started professionally conducting the Berlin Philharmonic in 1929. To smash reviews and then conduct it everywhere. But anyway, that movie that I made was nominated for an Academy Award 40 years ago this year.
Isn't that amazing, huh?
It is amazing.
Wow.
So, I started my career very early. Actually, I started performing earlier than that because my father had a radio show for 30 years, and he would trot me out on the radio to sing and play the piano and sing a duet with him, and I sang in the school shows, and I sang in my teacher's programs, and I sang for every, the Lions Club, the Elks Club, the Kiwanis Club. I was always on stage from being very, very young. So I guess that gave me my, I must have inherited my genes, because I have a long history of adventurers, actually, in my family history. So that probably helps, too.
Absolutely. You know, I remember back talking about time flying, but 1967 was a year that I thought there was a lot of great music coming out that year. And I remember this album, Wildflowers, that came out and listening
in 67,
to it.
Yes, yeah. 67.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
Wildflowers was that year.
And I remember listening to Both Sides Now and just loving that song. And, of course, that's a member of the Grammy Hall of Fame, that tune. What a great song.
Yeah, it's a great song. It's Joni Mitchell's, yes. I think, at her best. She's written some quite good songs otherwise, but I think that might be the top. Right there.
I agree with you. And Joni's had, you know, some songs on her own that have succeeded. But the way you sang that, it was just perfection. That's one of the most beautiful songs ever done.
I'm so glad.
And then you skip around to 1975, and Send in the Clowns comes out from Steve Sondheim's A Little Night Music. And,
yes.
And you do that song, and it wins the Song of the Year at the Grammys in 1975. What a beautiful, beautiful song.
That's a great song, yeah. I'm very grateful for that. That song has carried me through many, many decades.
Well, you know, Judy Collins has many, many songs, and we asked people out there what their favorites were, and most people said Both Sides Now. But
yeah.
I'll tell you that the one that I picked, and also two other people around the country that responded to our poll, they picked The Beatles' In My Life. I love the way you do that song.
That's... glad to hear you say that. Well, that was 1966, and it was kind of a call the police event because I was a folk singer. I wasn't supposed to be singing the Beatles song.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of, you know, I was always breaking the rules from the time I was a child. So I guess it fit right in with my activism and my rule-breaking personality.
Well, what a magnificent performance of that song. I don't think anybody's ever sang it as well as you did.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, I sing it quite often in my concerts, I must say. Not every night, of course, because there are so many songs. You know, it's 55 years, really, worth of material. Actually, longer if you count the other things, because I will sing things from early. You know, I'll pull out a song that I sang at my high school prom or something.
Well, after, so, you know. After I discovered you in 1967, I'm also a record collector, so I went back in time and found a 1961 album of yours called Made of Constant Sorrow.
Oh, my very
and,
first.
Yes, and that had songs by Bob Dylan on it, Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton. And,
yes, I was right here in New York City in the Village, in the hotbed of the singer-songwriter, and I didn't write songs, you know, so I was I have always been the, what would you call me, the maven of great songwriters.
Well, yeah, you are the, I don't know, the needle to their record player or something, I don't, because without you, their songs would not sound the way they did, so.
Well, that's true enough, and that's lucky, and I'm still doing it, thank God.
And you're still sounding great, too, by the way. I know that because I heard you on the CD, Judy Collins Live in Ireland, which is available right now in stores and on Amazon and all over the place.
All over the place.
And, in fact, there's actually a website called judycollins.com as well they can go to.
Yes, there is a website with the PBS specials. That one, as well as the one I did in 2012 called Judy Collins Live at the Metropolitan Museum. And I recorded that in a very famous place, the Temple of Dendur. I don't know if you've ever been to the Temple of Dendur at the Metropolitan Museum in New York, but it is quite an extraordinary space. And I was able to do a special there with my guests were Sean Colvin and Jimmy Webb. Oh,
wow.
What a great experience that was. Jimmy's
that
an old
like
friend, and I love his writing. I've recorded some of his songs, and he played for me on that show. He played the first song of his that I ever recorded in 1974 called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. And after we got to be friends, he said to me, you know, when you recorded that song in 1973, I guess it was, he said, that song had been languishing for years, 9 years before I'd written it, and nobody had touched it. And I recorded it, he said, on my album, and then you picked it up, and then everybody else had to record it, too.
That's a good thing.
So he said, thank you.
Yeah.
Promoting my songwriting skills.
Yeah, well, you know, Glenn Campbell was actually, I think, Jimmy Webb's version of you and Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
Because I was never a big fan of the voice of Leonard Cohen, although later on it kind of grew on me, and I actually like it now. But
yeah.
But I couldn't believe what you did with his tunes, because you made them palatable for many, many people who didn't find him, you know, that desirable.
Yes, you know, I've just recorded Hallelujah. I haven't ever done it. But I decided I had to do it. I've done so many of his songs. And also, I really owe him, because he's the one who asked me why I wasn't writing my own songs after I'd started recording his. And I said, well, I really don't know. But then I sat down, started noodling, and started writing, and the first song I wrote was Since You've Asked. So Leonard owes me a debt of gratitude, and I owe him a debt of gratitude, so it's kind of an equal back-and-forth assessment, you know, that we owe each other a lot.
I guess, yeah. But I'm particularly fond of the songs you do up by him. I like his version of Suzanne as well, though, I must admit.
Yes, oh, no, it's a great song.
Yeah. Now, I know you have these incredibly beautiful blue eyes, and in many of the earlier albums, they really were featured prominently. They're not featured on the Irish album because they are in a side pose. But I will say that one of the things I thought was fascinating was the song Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Tell us a little bit about how that developed, and of course you've taken that and used it as the title of your new book.
Yes, my new book, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, was written by Stephen Stills when he and I were having this hot affair in 1968. And it was short-lived, the affair, I mean, but of course the song has lived on forever, so it's really quite exciting to have it be still a part of Americana, I would say, the music of the time. And it's never lost its appeal for me, naturally, but I think it's never lost its appeal for other people, too. I think they really love the song, and they're very excited when they hear him do it, which is rare. He doesn't always do it when he's with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and sometimes Young. But he does often do it, and of course it was a great experience to be the muse for that song. It's quite a privilege.
You had some wild times back then, and I guess that you detailed them in the book. I have not read the book. I would if I had it, but I don't have it right now.
I'm going to send it to you. I'll get an address.
But I understand that it's about some of the things that you went through. But in the last 30 years, you've settled down. You're a happy woman with a nice guy, and things changed from that earlier time.
Well, they did, and of course, part of it, most of it, almost 1,000% of it, that is that I was an alcoholic and I was drinking for, you know, 23 years while I was having that big career. And then when I got sober in 1978, I continued to have this big career. So I'm very lucky because I've had, as they say in the song, both sides now in my life. And I prefer this one, frankly.
Were you scared, though, Judy, when you decided, okay, I'm going to be sober? Were you scared that at that moment that you didn't have the drugs or alcohol in you, that all of a sudden you wouldn't be able to perform or you wouldn't be able to do what you thought you could do?
I was afraid of a lot of things, but the most important thing was that I was dying, and I really didn't have a choice. I didn't choose to quit drinking.
Wow.
I was intervened by a doctor who said, well, you know you're dying. You can probably tell that. I said, well, yes, I can tell that, but I didn't know what's wrong with me. And he said, well, I know what's wrong with you. You're a drunk, and you need to go to treatment. So I went to treatment. And, I mean, I didn't go. I guess I was relieved because I didn't realize this was 1978. People weren't trotting out on Oprah and talking about just getting out of rehab. You know, this was not something that was de rigueur for every rock and roll singer. This was something that was unusual. And I didn't know. I mean, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know that there was a way to contain that monster. And I was lucky to get off the bus when I did. You know, it's like, who is it that says, oh my God, the grill may be gone, but the circus is still in town.
You know, people have lots of respect for you and love for you, and it all culminated in an album called Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins. Love that. What was that like to go and have that?
Oh, that was so exciting to have other people sing my songs. I was just thrilled. It started out because an English singer, who's the woman who sings with the Pretenders?
Chrissy Hynde.
Chrissy. I ran into Chrissy at a big folk, Austin, not Austin City Limits, but I think South by Southwest. And I ran into her there. We were both doing talks on panels. And I had seen her before, but she came running up to me and she said, you know, I have this piece of paper taped to the back of my guitar, or perhaps to my mirror, I don't remember quite. And she said, I have a list of the top 10 songs that have been written in my lifetime. And on the top of the list is my father. And I said, well, would you like to record it? I'm going to think about that. And she was the first person to come on board for that album. And then a lot of people joined me. Bernadette Peters is on there. Leonard Cohen is on there. Jimmy Webb is on there singing, all singing songs that I've written. So that was thrilling for me.
Mm, yeah, it is an amazing thing. I love that thing. I thought
oh,
it was great.
Good.
I thought it was great.
Good.
Now, have you been to Boston before?
Oh, sure. I love Boston. Boston has been so good to me. You know, I started going up there. The first place I worked in Boston was the Golden Vanity. I'll bet you, I don't know if you even remember. It was 1960. And the Golden Vanity was across the street from BU on the railroad tracks there. And then later on, I started singing at the Club 47, which I think was then called Unicorn. I'm not sure.
Wow.
At one point, it was the Unicorn, and at one point, it was the Club 47. And I don't know which was which, but... But anyway, I've always had a very, very strong Boston audience. They've always been there for me, and I used to do Symphony Hall every other year, I think. And sometimes it was symphony. I worked with Arthur Fiedler.
Oh, wow. Boston Pops. Yeah.
In 1976 with that was also... I think that must have also been PBS.
Yes, I was actually there.
Oh, you're kidding.
I was there in 1976 for the Boston Pops at the Hat Shell. Well, you were there. And
oh, my.
PBS did cover that.
I think that was played on PBS. I've had a long history with PBS. Anyway, I started doing Sesame Street probably in 1974 or 75.
Wow. Did you run into Miss Piggy at all when you were there? Because Miss Piggy and I did.
Jealous.
We had a relationship, Miss Piggy and I, a while back.
Because I had a relationship with Jim,
with Jim Henson.
With Kermit.
Oh, yeah.
And Jim. She was extremely jealous.
Yeah, she's a very jealous type. That's why I had to break up with her. I had
she
to break up with
oh,
her.
Oh, no, right.
Plus, she was very upset that I eat bacon, so she so that kind of ruined that. But so you're going to be and September 20th, you will be at the Wilbur Theater here in Boston.
Oh, yes. Yes, I will. That's going to be with Ari Hess as my opener, and I'm very excited that he'll be there. He's a great, great singer.
And, of course, you did the song The Fire Plays with him on the Judy
we'll
Collins.
Sing it. We'll sing it together that night. We just love to be able to sing together.
I'm a big Mary Black fan, too, so I enjoyed She Moved Through the Fair. That was great, too.
Oh, I love that song, too.
Yeah, it's a great song. I love your music. And on her biography, on Judy's biography, it says on it, she continues to create music of hope and healing that speaks to the heart. And I agree. That's absolutely true.
Thank you so much.
And Judy, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
And hang on a minute, because I'll try to get back on and talk to you right after we're done.
Good.
All right?
You're listening
to